We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the NBA Front Office Show. Happy Friday. Happy Father's Day weekend. All of you dads out there. Got plenty to get into today. We're going to talk about some free agent shooting guards. Joining me, as always, it's Keith Smith at Keith Smith NBA. Keith, how are you doing, man? Like, that was, I know, that was a tough night last night. Look, not going to lie, I felt relief with the outcome of the game. But of course, because that's going to be my own bias coming in. But at the same time, I felt for what you and a lot of other Celtics folks were dealing with on Twitter last night.
Yeah, it's really tough because if you had told Celtics fans before the year they're going to make the NBA Finals, they would have been happy with that. Sure. If you had told them in mid-January that they were going to make the NBA Finals, first they probably would have sent you for a mental health evaluation. Then they would have been extremely happy with that. But I get it. It sucks, right? It sucks to get that close. The games were all – the final scores weren't close, but the games themselves were still relatively close. Mm-hmm. I think it was maybe the second finals I saw ever where every game was 10 points or more decided, which is kind of interesting to note in it. But, yeah, it's tough. But, man, people just they go to the most angry places. There's like people who are legit now, and some of it's just the casual fans, right, who are like, sure, you know, and in a couple of days they'll be back to, you know, complaining about baseball and football and everything else. But, you know, it's, you know, Jason Tatum has no heart, he doesn't play hard, we got to get rid of this guy, and, you know, dumping on the whole team, and that stuff just gets draining and it wears on you very, very quickly. And, you know, quite frankly, I need to be better about just tuning it out and not even looking at it. But, you know, it is what it is. It was a good season for the Celtics. Unexpectedly good season, all things considered. And, you know, the future is still bright. You know, there's no guarantee they'll get back. I mean, the Thunder never did when they were that young, up-and-coming team. But,
right,
yeah, we'll see. We'll see what happens and, you know, how they move things forward. There's, you know, a whole lot going on there with, you know, will ownership green light going deep into the tax and those kind of things. And if they do, then they should be set up pretty well to add a couple guys to this roster, but we'll see where all that comes, you know, over the next couple weeks.
So yeah, when you pan back, you can't be too upset about this team that was not looking good in December, January. I mean, people were calling for Ime Udoka to be dismissed.
They were under 500 on January 21st.
Yeah. And then here they are in the final. So it's hard to, you know, with that context, it's hard to be too upset. But the way that game went down, I was surprised. I thought this is going to be big Jason Tatum game. Like, this is going to, this is going to be a 30 to 40 point Tatum game. And I'm seeing a lot of people out there that are expressing a lot of frustration with him. What do you think happened there? Is there injury? Is that fatigue? Is that what do you think happened with him? And I think part of this, we need a caution. He's 24. Right. Like, this is very much not Jason Tatum just doesn't have it, write him off forever situation. But in that specific game, there were long stretches where it didn't feel like his presence was felt to the degree that you thought it was going to be.
No, it's absolutely true. He was the best player on the floor in the first round when they beat the Nets against Kevin Durant. He was the best player on the floor at times. When they beat the Bucks and Giannis in the second round, and he was the best player on the floor in the East Finals for the majority of, you know, the time in the seven games, and that featured Jimmy Butler. At no point did I think he was going to be better than Stephen Curry, but I thought he'd be a lot better than he was. Just couldn't make shots, especially inside. His finishing around the rim fell apart. He drove the ball more than he ever has in any six-game stretch in the finals. That's regular season at any point. He drove the ball more. Percentage of his plays number of drives per game, I should say. Well, I guess percentage of his plays too, but number of drives per game were up. But his finishing was abysmal. He was like 31% on drives. Mm-hmm. Against the Bucks with Giannis and Brooke Lopez inside, he was at almost 49% finishing against those guys off of drives. So I don't know. I don't want to put excuses out there. You know, his shoulder was clearly bothering him. He was clearly tired, but he just wasn't good enough. I mean, that's just, you know, when we see this sometimes, and it's almost like players, it feels like they always go one of two ways. Either this becomes, remember that series where Jason Tatum faltered and wasn't very good against the Warriors, and then he was great from thereafter, or this could be he got there, he's never really good, and then he never really, you know, got to that level again. So only time will tell. You know, that as you said, he's 24. There's a lot of story left to be written there. But yeah, right now it's discouraging for sure with the way he played. And I think the important thing is he knows it, and no one is more discouraged than he is.
Sure.
Like he is the most even keeled player I've ever covered. Doesn't get excited, doesn't get down. It's pretty much he's in a lot of ways, very, very boring to cover as far as his quotes and stuff, because he just doesn't give you anything. You know, it's always, oh, you know, they're a great team. That's a great player. And I need to work hard. I need to be better. And blah, 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 all the stuff that guys say when they don't want to say anything. And last night, you could tell he was crushed. He was devastated. In his post-game presser, I've never seen him look like that. And that, in a lot of ways, as much as it's painful, that's encouraging. Because as Ime Udoka said, which is so true, you want it to hurt. Yeah. Hurt now for months. Take this hurt all the way into October and let that be what pushes you forward, you know, as we go into next season. So, you know, it sucks, but it is what it is.
I thought the other big story out of this from the Celtics side in terms of why this result came about, because the Celtics were the favorite going into the game. There was a point in this series where it looked like the Celtics were in pretty good shape. They were up 2-1.
Yeah. Up 2-1 with a lead in game four.
That's right.
To go up 3-1. And
yep.
Yeah.
The bench really disappeared. Yeah. I mean, five points from the bench. And the moment looked too big for Derek White. Grant Williams was, you know, 16 minutes, 1-for-2 shooting, didn't really make much of an impact out there. This is what's so confounding is, the bench was so strong in the previous series. They were the guys that were just, they were clutch. They were making plays. Yeah. They were looking like everything was just on autopilot. Like the pressure didn't phase them. And then suddenly here we get to the finals and you get into the later stages and it was like, they just forgot how to be successful.
Yeah. Grant Williams and Peyton Pritchard never really showed up in the finals. Mm-hmm. I don't know if they just stayed in Miami after game seven or what happened. Derek White was pretty good in the first couple games and then just absolutely fell off the planet. Just couldn't make a shot. Didn't look confident at all in a shot. We actually just wrapped up exit interviews with actually all three of those guys. And they all touched on points of confidence at points. And with Williams and Pritchard, you get it a little bit more. I think there's with White, there's, you expect a little bit more because he's more of a veteran, but also I think there's some of this. Well, he was with the Spurs, but he wasn't with the Spurs, right? Like he wasn't there for that. He hasn't been around that long. He kind of came in on the tail end of a couple of those guys finishing up. So it's definitely tough. That is the spot where upgrades are needed. The starting five is good. You know, everybody yells and screams and you know, shouldn't have done it. And I get caught in it on Twitter last night in game, you know, with all the Celtics need a floor general stuff. Mm-hmm. And people love to say that, but nobody ever says who. And then when they do, they're like, they need a Chris Paul type. Chris Paul is one of one. There's not Chris Paul types. Like there's Chris Paul and then there's everybody else. Like it's just, you know, it's crazy to me. I mean, we just covered in our last show before last, whenever it was, we just covered all the free agent point guards. And no, you could go trade for somebody, of course, but it's these old school run the offense floor generals that people think they need. They just don't really exist. And if they do, they're, you know, like Ricky Rubio coming off a torn ACL at 32 and he can't shoot. So is Ricky Rubio going to be playable in the end of a playoff game? Like, yeah, you know, where are we going with that? Like that's what's tough. So as I look at everything this team needs, I'm going to say that not that there couldn't be improvements. So Marcus Smart is not a top 10 point guard. I'm not being stupid, but to get reasonable improvements, I don't know that you're going to upgrade much on the starting five, but you can add bench guys. In order to do that, they're going to have to be pretty expensive. They're going to have to go deep into the tax. They have a $17 million trade exception that they can use. They will have the taxpayer MLE they can use. You can go get players with those, really round out your rotation and be ready to go. Because of how poor the free agent class is, both of those are really nice tools, right? Especially the taxpayer mid-level. You know, because I've been saying it about the Lakers, that's kind of their only tool this summer, but it's a good one. Because it has good spending power, because there's not a lot of cap space around the league. So you should be able to pick off a pretty useful player. Boston's in the same place. But unlike Golden State, Brooklyn, Milwaukee, even this past year, we'll see where they go going forward. The Lakers when they're really good. The Clippers, obviously, now. The Celtics have put a limit on how far into the tax or if they're even willing to go into the tax. They have always said, if we're a title contender, we'll pay the tax. Mm-hmm. Well, we'll pay the tax is a lot different from we'll pay hundreds of millions of dollars in the tax, right? So but test it, right? We got to find out, like, what is that? Is that we'll go $10 million into the tax? We'll go $15 million into the tax? Whatever it is, because clearly now you can't even make the case that, well, they're not really a title contender. You were just there playing game six. You're there. You got to spend the money now and see where it goes.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's just it. They've proven that they're a title contender. And so now there's no excuse for not spending. They're going to have to go out there and see if they can find some additions. Flip it over to the Warriors. You know, we talked early in the series about how bad Draymond looked. We talked about how many things needed to go right for the Warriors. And then they all went right. I mean, Steph Curry was 0 for 9 from 3 last game, 6 for 11 in this one. I thought that was unbelievable. He's absolutely incredible. Absolutely incredible. Finals MVP. I hate all the discussion around that. I hate all the hot takes and the oh, well, now what does this mean for Kevin Durant's legacy? What does this mean for Steph Curry's legacy? What is Curry better than LeBron now? Where does Curry rank now all time? Like, my goodness, just enjoy an incredible performance by an incredible player.
Like, what? 14 hours ago or in that range. Like, yeah, what are we doing? Yeah.
No, it's crazy.
I, if I can on Steph, my thought process, and they know it came in an avalanche of tweets as everything went. And I said, Steph Curry earned the MVP. He didn't need it, but he earned it. Right. And in my opinion, he didn't need to have finals MVP to validate his career. I mean, what are we doing? Like, this guy's, you know, great. People act like he got the Warriors to the finals and then put his feet up those other years and let other people, you know, go win it for him. Like, he was still good. Just, you know, the other guys were better, I guess. And the Iguodala one, that's even still, you know, that's even kind of questionable there. But yeah, I don't get that. Yeah. And then pulling in, you know, all these other players, like, it's just, you know, God, let's save those discussions for August. Like,
right. Yeah. We have nothing. It's like we're out of things to talk about. Let's talk about where Steph Curry ranks all time. Like, let's talk about what he did on the floor last night. Let's talk about the way that he was able to ISO Al Horford and get into the paint. I think that's, everybody thinks of him as a 3-point shooter, but I thought his ability to get to the rim was absolutely phenomenal.
Those two layups, huge.
He didn't look like he was trying. He did it at his own pace. At his own speed. It wasn't like John Morant goes flying at the basket and he has his own style and everything and all of that. Like, that's great. Steph, you're watching him and you're like going, he's not going to give. Oh, he did get by. Yep. Then suddenly he's at the rim and he's got this layup. And it's it's incredible, and it speaks to just his skill. And I know the shooting causes defenders to be out further on him. He picked the right times to attack. He was absolutely fantastic all game. And then I thought you got fantastic performances out of, I thought that was the best Draymond we've seen in a long time.
Over the last couple games, he's been really good. Yeah.
He was next level. And it wasn't even just the stats. You look at the stats, 12 boards, 8 assists, 2 steals, 2 blocks, 12 boards. That, I mean, that's like peak Draymond right there, right? But there were so many times last night during the game where Draymond did something defensively, and I went, oh my gosh, like the read that he made was unbelievable. Like incredible, just anticipating exactly what was going to happen and knowing the right spot, the right place to be. He was phenomenal. Andrew Wiggins didn't shoot well, but defensively, he was absolutely fantastic. And then still puts up, and look at the stat line, 18 points, 6 boards, 5 assists, 4 steals, 3 blocks. I mean, I think for as much as we talk about Jason Tatum's struggles, you got to give credit to Andrew Wiggins for what he was doing defensively with him. This was a phenomenal performance from him for a guy that was, you know, written off for quite a while. And now he's found this fit. There's been a lot of talk of, did the Warriors just, was that just the right environment for him? I think that's part of it. I also think the NBA has shifted a little bit from when, as well as Wiggins himself has grown and developed and all that. But the NBA, in terms of what skill sets are valuable, has changed since he came into the league towards what he does, you know, in terms of what he can do defensively, in terms of what his athleticism can bring you in a wing player. And it's all worked out for him. And now he's looking fantastic. And again, this was a huge redemption moment for him in the NBA Finals.
Yeah, if I can hit on a couple of things there, those two layups that Curry got on Horford, yeah, those were kind of, they came when Boston was still there. Like they were still like trying to get over that hump and they just couldn't get those stops. That pull up three he hit the edge of the logo, basically. Like that was at that point, maybe that was the one where he started pointing to his ring finger afterwards, which was just, I mean, that's all time, you know, like, guy got you here stuff. I mean, he was just unreal. Draymond, yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, when it is all said and done at the end, I hope people recognize that this guy is one of the greatest defensive players we've ever seen. Mm-hmm. Like, there's just nothing he can do. And then on Wiggins, I think Wiggins.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
His ability to adapt his own game is huge, because sometimes when guys are the number one overall pick, they just are who they are. Not that they don't get better, but they don't change the way they play. And I think he joined that Warriors team and he went through with them a lot of stuff around, he learned how to cut off the ball and move and stay engaged and be a defender and be a team defender and do all the things that he needed to do that he just wasn't doing other places. And I don't know that it ever would have come without being with those guys, without those guys kind of riding him every single day of, you need to do this, you need to do that. I mean, his off ball game in this series was so good. You know, he had some of those relocation threes and those kind of things. He was great. You know, and then Clay, you know, making some big plays too down the stretch. I mean, they weren't all necessarily great in game six, but Otto Porter, Jordan Poole stepping in, Kevon Looney was just such a monster on the boards. I mean, that team, they're just well put together. And I guess what's kind of pivoting away from last night and the title kind of quickly, I mean, we'll have to see what James Wiseman, Jonathan Kuminga, and Moses Moody ultimately become, but they're really close to threading that needle of one group right into the next.
Right.
And those guys are not going to become the next, you know, Steph, Clay, and Draymond. Like, let's not be silly. But I think it is those three guys, if they can get better and give them something, this Warriors team's not going to go away. I'm not saying they'll contend for a title every single year, but they're just not going to go away because you've got those three guys, you got Jordan Poole, you've kind of got your next guys coming down the line. So I'm very, very interested. I'm curious to see, you know, do they eventually hit a point where they're like, all right, we got all these guys. Do we need to pay Gary Payton the second? He was also great defensively.
Otto Porter.
The series. Yeah, Otto Porter, Kevon Looney. Even do we and can we pay all these guys? I mean, basically right now they're printing money, so I guess they can. But, you know, I mean, at some point everybody, you know, I continue to believe everybody but Steve Ballmer has an upper bounds to, you know, what they're willing to pay. But we haven't found it for the Warriors yet. Maybe there isn't one. Maybe they will just keep paying guys and keep churning.
Yeah, it's certainly possible. I mean, when you're winning championships, that's going to be the expectation, is that you keep it rolling. So we'll see what they do there. Last thing, and then I know we need to get into our free agent shooting guards. Klay Thompson, I mean, two devastating injuries.
Yeah,
to come back and get to where he was. You know, there have been a few stories out about him and about the toll it took, you know, the loneliness, being rehabbing for that long and being away from your team. Mm-hmm. That's not easy. And so this is big for him to come all the way back. And even though he didn't shoot that great in the last game, I thought he had a good series, and for him to battle all the way back, I think that's huge, personally, as well as, you know, organizationally for the team, but personally for him to battle back from those two injuries and then find himself back on the top of the mountain. That's a pretty incredible story.
And I fully understand sports hate and hate are two very different things.
Yeah.
Right. Where there's people we say we hate, right? Like I know for you, like, you hate the Celtics, right? But sure. Like, that's a, you know, I would hope that's not a real thing, right? Like, I would hope if, you know, you saw a Celtic in the street and needed help, you would help, right?
Oh, no. Yeah. Right? Like when we were doing our live show last night, and when Jaylen Brown went down, and it looked like at first there was a moment where he reached and he grabbed the back of his leg by his heel, and I went, oh, my stomach dropped. I went, oh my gosh, because even look, I don't want to see the Celtics win and all that because of the Lakers and all that kind of stuff. I don't want to see anybody hurt. Yeah. Certainly. I don't care if they're a Celtic Clipper. It doesn't matter. That's very much the case.
And I guess with Klay too, it's hard to even find anybody who sports hates Klay. Right. Like, there are some, but those people I think are just generally miserable people who hate everything. Mm-hmm. I think with Klay, if you can't be happy for him above all else there, like, it's like, then, you know, please don't subscribe and don't watch our show anymore. Cause you're just not a good person. Right. Like, it's just everything he went through. The guy is just, you know, and you hit it. He hit on the loneliness, the times when it was, he said multiple times, just me and Wiseman down there in the G League. You know, and then he talked about how, like, and they had those G League guys beating the crap out of me every day, you know, and I just wanted to get back. And he talked about how, like, you know, and then I would go home, work out, do my thing, and go home because the team was on the road
right.
for 2 years of that. Like, that is, you know, that's you think of, he's made a ton of money. He won championships. He could have just said, I'm done. He could have very easily said, you know what, it's been a good run, I'm done. But he just kept working and got back. And, you know, super happy for him, you know, above probably everybody. You know, I'm happy for Steph, too, because, you know, I just think it's, you know, not that he didn't need it, but it's, you know, anytime a guy can shut up more people, like, great, you know.
Yes.
You know, quiet them all down. But, yeah, I, you know, all around, you know, final thoughts on the season. I know you hated it. You, I think, multiple times have said it's the worst NBA season ever.
Yes, indeed. It was the worst Lakers season in history.
Sure. I think, you know, quite frank, I'm a little sad the Celtics didn't really put the nail on that.
Understandable. Understandable.
You know, but it's, yeah, I mean, all around, though, I think this was a super fun season. We saw some young guys really step forward. I thought the playoff games themselves weren't great, especially in the last couple rounds. Yeah. Like, we had so many blowouts. So that was
early games were good. Early rounds were a blast. Absolutely.
Like, that Celtics Nets series felt like everyone didn't know they didn't, but felt like they all came down to the last minute, too. Even though that one was a sweep, like, it was just kind of a weird playoffs. But, you know, all around, I think, you know, I was asked this earlier today. I think the league's in great shape. I think, you know, the NBA is in phenomenal shape as far as, you know, good young stars. Some of the older stars are still hanging around and super productive and probably get another couple years in them. So, you know, I think all around we're excited and, you know, let's hope for a exciting offseason. And I think that's where we're headed next, right?
Yep. Yeah. And right now we're going to continue our series breaking down to the free agents because the NBA, it's a year-long news cycle. And now we're going to get into, we've got the draft in less than a week now. We've got free agency. And today we're going to take a peek at free agent shooting guards and what that market looks like. So let's jump into it here. Here All right. is,
yeah.
You want to do, why don't you do the intro in case anybody missed the point guard. So can you explain again, Keith, how this works?
Yep. So what I do with these, and if you're watching the show or you listen here as we talk about this, and you'll be able to read these in print at SpotTrack probably next week. We'll have those up there. So I will say this with these rankings. I do these the way the teams generally do them. They split these guys into tiers. The tiers are all-star, starter, rotation, and fringe. Just a quick explainer on those in case you didn't listen to the point guard show. But really, go back and listen to the point guard show, too, because we had a lot of fun with that one. But the all-star doesn't necessarily mean these guys are all-stars or have been all-stars. It's more about, are they an all-star level of player? If they're a little younger, could you see them being an all-star? In this case, the guys who I have in that tier all have been all-stars at times. The starter level, it's either a starter or a starter level of impact. So if we think back to the all-time great sixth men, or even like this year, Tyler Hero, he's not a starter, but Tyler Hero is a starter level player because of the impact he has, how much he plays. Rotation guys are just that. They're rotation guys. This doesn't mean they're bad players. They're just good players. There's generally some limitation that keeps them from being a starter. Even sometimes some of the rotation guys are starters, but they're like starters who start and they're out 5 minutes into the game and those kind of things. And then fringe are guys who are towards the back end of rosters. They think your last 3 to 5 players on each roster, just kind of hanging in there. This is where most of the two-way guys will fall and those kind of things. If you have any problems with the rankings, if you're looking at them on the YouTube show, or if you look at them in print, they're mine. They're not Trevor's. So yell at me, not him. But we'll get into it with that said. The tiers here, the all-star tier for shooting guards. I have 3 players in this tier, James Harden, Zach LaVine, Bradley Beal. Trevor, if you have any challenges there, this show's probably going to go right off the rails.
No, I think that is very clear cut. And I think it's great that we actually even have a little bit of news about James Harden.
Yes,
to get it to kick things off here. Word is that he may be looking at a short-term extension rather than long-term deal and actually opting in. So what are the ramifications of that? Now, obviously that means that even though he's here on the free agent list, he won't truly be a free agent. He'll wind up sticking with the 76ers, but this player option that we'd be assuming he'd be declining. Now it sounds like he's probably actually picking this up. Why are they going this route? Is this good for the 76ers? What does all of this mean, Keith?
Yeah, I think, and you're absolutely right. If we even, I don't know, 6 months ago, 3 months ago, or played 4 around the trade deadline, we would have assumed that opting out and signing a max deal, no brainer, right, for James Harden. That's where we would have gone to. But I think now we're in a position with James Harden where it sounds like what's going to happen is there's just a difference in where do we want to go. with the contract. It sounds like there's a lot of reporting. Jake Fisher had some of this. Derek Bodner, who covers the Sixers. And if you're interested in Sixers stuff, I don't, for my money, nobody does it better than Derek Bodner. He is fantastic covering that team. But they're both reporting that ownership has kind of concerns about going to 4 or 5 years at the max for James Harden. Yeah, if Harden was willing to take $10 million a year at the max, yeah, they'd do it without it, or at the 5 year maximum length. Of course he'd do it, right? And they would do it. They'd be happy. So, but it's 5 years and $60 million in year five. That's where they're balking. So what we're going to see him do, it sounds like, is he's going to opt in for next season. Then off of that, he's going to add 2 years in an extension. What will happen there is he'll get a bump all the way up to what his individual max is, which it's a little tricky to explain, but basically what happens is he's already above the max salary, total salary. So he gets a little bump on top of what his current salary is because he's already above the max. So that's what he'll do. He'll sign that to bump him up there. And then he'll in effect have what it seems like there's a little in the reporting, whether he's going to do a 2 year extension or 3 year extension. Mm-hmm. I tend to think it's probably a 2 year, which means he would have three total years. Yeah. I think that's where it's getting a little confused. But that's what it sounds like he's going to do, is a 2 year extension on top. And then if you're Philly, you're protected a little, right? Because if he really falls apart in the next couple of years, well, you've only got a couple of years left. If he is still good and you're Harden, well, then you're back on the market in a couple of years and you can kind of go in a different direction. My guess is probably what he'll do is he'll opt in. Then that third year in the extension, we'll get a player option on it too, just to kind of keep things moving for him. But he's not going anywhere, which we knew, right? I mean, let's be realistic. After all they gave up to get him, he wasn't going to go anywhere. But yeah, that's what it sounds like is going to happen with James Harden.
I think this is great for the Sixers. I mean, $46.8 million next season, so then you'll have some incremental raises coming off of that. But essentially, if you're the Sixers, I mean, depending on whether or not there's a player option that third year, instead of committing 5 years to James Harden and having him through age 37 season, you've only got him through age 35. Which I think that limits your risk quite a bit, because we've been saying for a while now that where Harden's next contract could really get dangerous, it's not so much these first few years. You're still going to get solid production out of him, even if he isn't prime Houston Rockets James Harden. You're still going to get some value there, but you're eliminating those years where you'd be looking at this contract and thinking, man, do we really want to pay 37-year-old James Harden $60 million? Like, that's a lot. They're chopping that off and making it so that, hey, if he stays in shape and he's great and he looks like he's just this warrior all the way through and isn't gonna fall to pieces, then okay, maybe you do cross that bridge. But now you have the option of saying, you know what, this isn't working. You're not you're starting to age out here, and let's move on. So I mean, this is fantastic for the 76ers, even if you have to pay a little bit more than you would have maybe ideally wanted in terms of, you know, $46.8 million for next season and then jumping off of that as well. It's a lot, but
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink, which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
I mean, it's the years, not the money. Like, I would rather do this than get James Harden to take a minor discount and have it be a 5 year deal.
Yeah, and the reality was, it doesn't sound like that's what he wanted to do either, right? Sure. And if, you know, and let's say James Harden, you know, falls into the, I don't think he's going to, but the LeBron or Chris Paul camp and says, you know what, I'm going to now start really investing in my body. And I'm going to, you know, I'm going to get one of those hyperbaric chambers and I'm going to live in that thing and, you know, do all the stuff that those guys do. Then maybe he is great, you know, in, you know, year 37 and 38 and those kind of things. But, you know, for now, I think if you're Philly, this is a pretty good split the difference. All right, moving on. Zach LaVine and Bradley Beal are the other two guys in the All-Star tier. We don't need to spend a ton of time here. Beal has basically confirmed he's going to opt out of his contract, but he is also, without saying it, kind of said he's very likely to resign. He did say, I want to be where I can win, but then he also couched that with, I think I can do that here in DC. Zach LaVine, despite, you know, a million stories, which now feel like they were filler fluff when news was dry, it's now coming out, shocker, as Trevor and I have continued to tell you guys for months, Zach LaVine's going to resign in Chicago. Like, it just, you know, they can offer him the fifth year and more money. And when you've had two knee injuries, it's big. So that's where these three guys, I think they all stay where they are, at least going into next season. We'll see what happens beyond that. But that's it. Then it gets interesting, I think, when we get into the starter.
Yes. Bucket here. Yes, indeed.
Because there's a bunch of guys here, and this is weird because I kind of like these guys more than the all-star guys, just because of there's upside in this group.
Yeah.
Anfernee Simons is the next guy on my list. I have him at the top of the starter tier, fourth ranked shooting guard overall. Some people say Anfernee Simons is a point guard. I can't argue that, but he's going to be playing alongside Damian Lillard most likely, which means he'll be off the ball. It'll be like Lillard and CJ was, right? Like, it'll be, they'll share the duties, and Simons will be the starting two guard and the backup point guard most likely. I love him.
Right. Yeah. He's, you know, fantastic.
One of my favorite. You know, and I get it. There's maybe a little bit of empty stats there. But again, and where this is going to come up with the next guy on the list too, empty stats but at good efficiency aren't that empty to me. That feels more real than a guy who averages 30 points on, you know, 42% shooting. If you can put up numbers while shooting in the, you know, mid to high 40s, feels a lot more real to me. And I like Simons. I thought he came along a big, big way as a playmaker for others too, which was big instead of just being a scorer. Defensively, he's a train wreck. That him and Lillard as a defensive backcourt's just going to be a mess. That's going to be must watch TV because they're going to do crazy stuff, and the teams playing them are probably going to put up big numbers. But, you know, it is what it is. I can't imagine Portland lets him get away.
Take advantage of fantasy players going against Portland, particularly guards. And then you move to Colin Sexton. You and I have both been fans of his, particularly with the efficiency, like you were talking about, the Anfernee Simons. Do we think he's staying? They just can't, I mean, restricted. It seemed, you know, back in the trade deadline, there was a lot of talk about the Cavs moving him. And now it feels like it's shifted the other way to where we're hearing more rumblings about them keeping him. But again, with him being a restricted free agent, it's possible that's just being put out there to kind of, you know, scare away any suitors. But it feels like now we're on track for Colin Sexton to stick around, at least until the trade deadline, when rumors start to spike up again.
Sure. Yeah, I think the Rubio injury helps him sticking around a little bit more. We talked about this. Rubio's in the point guard group, obviously. In the major assumption around the NBA is that he's probably going to go back to Cleveland. But I think they've got room for Sexton. And then you kind of let it sort itself out as we get into, you know, around the trade deadline when Rubio will be back. Because then you could have Garland, Okoro, Sexton, Rubio, Caris LeVert, and you're kind of dealing from a position of strength at that point. Even if you don't get Rubio back, you're still in pretty good shape. If those are kind of your four guards, that's pretty good guard depth, and that should get you through, you know, what you need. Sexton and LeVert, I don't know how much they can play together, because that's a lot. Two guys who want to shoot quite a bit on the same unit, but you sort through that. But yeah, I'm a big Colin Sexton fan. I do wonder if maybe one of the teams with cap space, if they fall short other places and he's kind of still floating out there, let's say it's like July 5th or 6th as the moratorium's kind of expiring and most teams have already reached their agreements and he's still sitting out there and they're sitting on $20 million in cap space, do you say, you know what, we'll throw it at Colin Sexton and at least force the Cavs to make a decision? And maybe that's where that one plays out. Next, look, another restricted free agent, we'll stick with it, Lou Dort of the Oklahoma City Thunder. This is getting a little odd with this one. This one felt like a guarantee that his team option would be declined to make him a restricted free agent.
Right. We talked about that.
The Thunder would control the process. Now we're starting to hear Lou Dort's name being mentioned in trade talks, uh-huh. which would mean they'd have to pick up that option. And we're starting to hear maybe the Thunder don't want to put a, let's say he's going to make $15 million average annual value salary, feels about right-ish for him, that the Thunder don't want to carry that into a couple years from now when they should. Kemba Walker comes off the books and they'll have a bunch of cap space potentially. So this one's starting to get a little odd. So I think if you had asked me even a month ago, I would have said it was 90-10 that they would decline this team option, make him a restricted free agent, and get him re-signed.
Mm-hmm.
Now I'm thinking it's maybe more 40-60 that's the way it goes, which I don't swing like that much on changes. Like I don't drop my percentages to thought process very often, but there's just something weird going on with that whole situation.
We talk about all the time, you know, reading between the lines, who benefits. I'm having a tough time thinking of who benefits from that. Like from that getting out from, I mean, it doesn't seem like there's really, which, I mean, does that then mean that this is more likely to just be the truth?
Yeah. Yeah. I don't, yeah. It doesn't help anybody. Really. Yeah. I mean, unless it is, hey, we'll pick him. We'll pick up the option and put him in a trade. But that's just a known thing anyway. Like right. That's not a thing. So yeah, I'm really curious to see. All right, three more guys in the starter tier. Again, right. We said this point guards pretty thin group here. You know this, and this is going to repeat. Spoiler alert: when we get to the small forwards, power forwards, and centers is actually. Super deep.
Center's not bad, but the other, thin.
The other two, they're worse than this. So yeah. If you think this is bad. I have Gary Harris next on the list.
Small forward, it's just going to be a tumbleweed as our graphic, and that's going to be it.
Yeah, kind of. It's like a tumbleweed around the Martin twins. And spoiler there, too. I love those two guys. Gary Harris is the next guy on my list. I think he kind of became forgotten because he spent the year in Orlando. Had a pretty good year in Orlando. Seemed like he maybe got a shot back together a little bit as the year went along. He's not going to be back with the Magic, barring something really weird happening. That's not where they're going as a team. Somebody's going to get a really good value in Gary Harris. And he's a guy, I think, for it feels like 15, 16 teams, you either plug him in as your starting two guard, or he comes in as your kind of number one wing off the bench in your set. And you just move forward. I've always been a big Gary Harris fan.
What do you think he goes for out of the market?
Probably the MLE. I think he's going to get the full MLE from somebody. There is slight potential. Maybe the Magic do a sign in trade that maybe you could get him 12, 13 mm-hmm. million a year. And that's how he pluses up his salary a little bit from a team. And maybe they send, you know, a questionable ish salary back to Orlando or something like that. So maybe that's the way it goes with him. But yeah, that feels about right to me.
So he's an interesting one. Bruce Brown Jr., another guy that, I mean, he's so unconventional in terms of how we saw the Nets.
Is he a two guard?
Right, exactly. How the Nets used him. And that makes me like, what is his market really if teams are looking at what the Nets did with him and saying that's how we have to use him in order for him to be successful? That's not necessarily an easy thing. Like you mentioned Gary Harris being maybe a plug and play two guard. I don't know if you could say the same for Bruce Brown Jr., but he can still provide a lot of value. And I'm not sure he's not going to provide more value than Gary Harris or, you know, but there's that little added wrinkle of, do you have to use him in that specific way where he's like kind of almost a false five for you.
As you get past the first few guys on the list, that are kind of the all-star level guys and then Simons. He's the best playmaker of this group because he's actually a pretty good passer. What will determine for Bruce Brown is, do you believe he's a 40% shooter and is that percentage scalable with a little bit more volume? Because if you think he can get to three or four attempts per game, maybe even five or six, and maintain high 30s or low 40s as a percentage, now all of a sudden you've got a guy who's really, really good because of his all-around ability to do things. So that's where, you know, let's see, deal with that one. But it's tough with him because, this is – it all depends on what what you think he is and what he can be for you. I want to go next to Pat Connaughton, player option. I will be shocked if he picks up his player option. He was really good. I have him in the starter tier because he did start for a lot of the year for the Bucs, mostly due to some injuries and things like that. But this guy is just, you know, whether you start him or you put him on your bench, he's going to come in. He's going to shoot really well. He's way more athletic than he ever gets credit for. He's
got springs.
Yeah, he's got like that white guy label of sneaky quick, sneaky athletic. Sorry, the dogs have decided to chime in on this one. but it's he is and he's tough. He's a guy who just fits. He's been there on, you know, championship level teams, and he raises his game in the postseason. He was better in the playoffs than he had been, in the regular season, 2 years running, including in the Bucks title run. So I'm a big Pat Connaughton guy. Again, I think probably mid-level-ish, or maybe Milwaukee just, you know, says, hey, we got to lock this down right away, and he doesn't even get that close.
And they can't replace him, right? So. Correct. There's going to be some incentive. Like, it wouldn't shock me if we see like a Robert Covington style deal for Pat Connaughton, sure, where the Bucks just look at it and say, you know what, we don't want to deal with this guy hitting the market. Let's get this done, even if it means we have to give him, you know, maybe he's an MLE guy, and the Bucks give him 11 or give him 12. Yeah, or, you know what I mean? Exactly. Something like that.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Hey, another team will give you, you know, the MLE. We'll go a little bit higher than that to keep you home here. And and it's cheating a little because we're not there, but that's similarly how it's probably going to go with Bobby Portis too, when we get to him on the big line. Mm-hmm. All right. Now we're into the rotation group. This is a big group, so we're not going to cover every guy.
Yeah. Let's hop, skip, and jump through this one.
We'll pick through some of the more interesting ones. I have Malik Monk at the top of this. Mm-hmm. I think Malik Monk is probably one of the most likely guys in this group to bump into that starting tier if he hits the right team. But Malik Monk is now as close to, I think, kind of locking into that instant offense off your bench guy. Mm-hmm. Great shooter. I thought he made strides as far as being able to do stuff beyond just shooting, but making some shots off the dribble and those kind of things. I don't know about you, but I think he was maybe arguably the brightest spot for the Lakers this season. I thought
one of them, sure,
one of the best players that they had, but by the end of the year. So yeah, I've got him at the top of the group. Again, either the MLE or a chunk of the MLE probably for Malik Monk.
Yeah, agreed. I think that's what we're going to see for him. He's going to have some opportunities out there, and like, he has that ready-made role. At his best, he's probably your sixth man off the bench, your microwave scorer that can come in and get a bucket for you or get multiple buckets, get hot. That's him. And he's been great. He revived his career in LA last season. And I think he's going to get paid this summer.
And I think, unfortunately for the Lakers, that's what's probably going to happen somewhere else, because they're just, you know, so limited in what they could pay him.
He's talked a lot about wanting to come back. But I mean, if a team comes along and says mid-level exception, and the Lakers are saying taxpayer mid-level exception.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. In hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
That's the problem.
What you could see happen there is if there's a, you know, a wink and a nod of take the taxpayer
one
and
plus one.
We've got early bird rights, we'll take care of you next year. But you have to have a lot of faith in, you know, where's the team going? What are we going to look like in a year? You know, all that sort of stuff. I know we said jump and skip around, but I do want to touch on Victor Oladipo because, you know, got back by the end of the year. Was looking pretty good. Looked pretty good in the playoffs. My guess is probably stays in Miami and kind of repays that loyalty of, you know, they paid him a couple million dollars to rehab on the company dime most of last year. So, you know, but, yeah, we'll see where that goes. A couple of restricted guys that are interesting. Lonnie Walker, the fourth out of San Antonio. Dante DiVincenzo with the Kings. DiVincenzo is not happy with the Kings. And I don't know if we talked about this or not, but he feels like the Kings kind of did him dirty. And he missed out on the starter criteria and the higher qualifying offer because they didn't play. They didn't start him. And he didn't get a ton of minutes after the trade. So he's not real thrilled with that one. So that could turn into an ugly situation there pretty quickly with that.
Yeah. Could it, I mean, would the Kings be willing, if he's upset enough, do you think the Kings would be willing to just let him go?
I don't know about just letting him walk, but I think that could turn into a, okay, you got a decent offer somewhere else. Let's turn it into a sign and trade and we'll sort through and get something out of it. Walker, I wanted to put him higher and I messed around with him a lot on the rankings. And I had him higher at points and then I knocked him back down and then I had him lower and put him back up. And ultimately I was like, this is just where it feels right. I really like his game. It's just, I don't know. He screams though, if he could get somewhere and get a bigger, more consistent role, maybe he could be a breakout guy. Then it kind of becomes the veteran pit of woe a little bit. Wesley Matthews, good bounce back year. He's 3 and D, but he doesn't offer anything else. But, you know, if you want to put him in your rotation, you're probably going to be okay. You know, he did all right for Milwaukee. Joe Ingles would have been higher in this, but we don't know at all what's going to happen with him after the torn ACL. The
injury,
If he was coming off a healthy season, he'd be up around probably 6 or 7 on the list.
Do you think he's like, we've talked about Ricky Rubio going back to the Cavs after injury. Do you think Joe Ingles lands back with Utah?
I kind of think that's maybe the way it goes. And to be clear too, why that's allowed, because sometimes people get confused, like, but he got traded. I thought it's a year. Not if your contract expires. That's only if you're waived. His contract expired. I tend to think yes, unless they make major roster changes where it's like, hey, we're kicking off a completely different iteration. Then maybe just goes and catches on somewhere with a team that will say something like, hey, you can spend the whole year basically rehabbing and then we'll get you back at the very end and go.
What are the odds that he sees the Jazz new jerseys and just says, God, I'm out. No, horrendous. I want no part of this.
Aren't those awful?
They're terrible.
Yeah, that yellow one, that's just...
You know, the mountain throwback one, that's fine or whatever. But yeah, the neon yellow,
I honestly don't hate the black one either. Yeah. The white with the black numbers and lettering, that's kind of okay too. But that yellow one's just... Ugh,
it looks like a scrimmage, like... jersey or something that you bust out for practices or something, and then everybody throws them in a pile in the middle of the floor. And
it almost looks like the reversible one they give the kid.
It does the
youth league. Exactly. All right, we'll whip right through the next guy. Scroll down just a tad if you can, so we can get to the bottom of the grouping. Austin Rivers, Wayne Ellington, Bryn Forbes, Avery Bradley. The next group, these guys all, Rivers is probably the closest thing to a two-way player on this, meaning can play on both ends of the floor. Ellington's just a shooter at this point, and he's not really elite enough to rank much higher. Same with Forbes. And then Avery Bradley, his defense has slipped enough now that I don't know where that's going for him. And I know Lakers fans were pretty frustrated with Avery Bradley by the end of the year, if I remember correctly. Mm-hmm. Tomas Satoransky, I would have had him higher because he can also play the point. But there's a lot of stuff out there that he may be headed over to Europe. So we'll see. Then, you know, the only other guys I kind of want to touch on here, Josh Okogie, Troy Brown Jr., a couple guys. I don't know that they'll even end up restricted free agents because I think both would do well to just sign the qualifying offer if it comes for either one of them, because I don't know that they're going to get more money than that. They're second draft guys. You're kind of taking a shot in the dark on either one of those guys. If you can scroll back up.
Yep.
Because we're almost out of the rotation guys here. The only other one is, I believe, Amir Coffey of the LA Clippers. He was converted, similar-ish situation to the others. I probably like him a little bit more. In the fringe group, there's just not anybody I really see jumping out of this group. No. Maybe Gabriel Ife Lundberg. He's the guy who came over from Denmark late in the year with the Suns. Mm-hmm. He had done some stuff overseas, so maybe I could see him popping. I know you'll forever have a place in your heart and believe he'll be great for Svi Mykhailiuk.
That's right.
He would be insane to not just pick up his player option unless he really thinks he can play somewhere else. But yeah, I mean, and even like Jarrett Culver, what a fall for him after top pick. But yeah, I mean, this group, you know, Lance is there, Tony Snell is there, but it's, you know, you're down into it when you get here.
Lance Stevenson, it's Indiana or bust.
Yeah,
for whatever reason, his powers only work in Pawnee. I don't know why, but I know, right? that's the way it goes. Crazy.
Yeah. So
I'm sorry, Elijah Keith. I'm sorry. I'm just realizing I did not do this intentionally, but I left the banner up all show saying Warriors win championship. Yeah. That was not intentional sure. or meant as like a shot or anything. Okay. I really did not see. I didn't notice until just sure. now.
Yeah, we all believe you. Okay, Trevor.
I apologize. You know, sure thing.
Yeah, right.
The whole show, Keith is just going, what is this? This guy's a jerk. What is he doing?
I would say, with Elijah Hughes was a guy I was hoping when he got traded to Portland, finally got rotation minutes, that he might break out and show a little bit more there. And he really didn't. So there's just, I mean, bunch of these guys will be training camp guys. Bunch of them will be on rosters next year. Some will be back on two ways, but that's the shooting guard position. It's, I feel like I'm a broken record, but it's a little light. Like,
be excited, you know, cap space teams. Be excited. Yeah.
Be looking at trades.
Boy. Yeah. Yep. It's going to be the summer of the trade. Oh, well, Keith, it didn't happen. I was so excited. Like, I'm waiting. I built a new breaking news drop.
And we didn't get any.
And there wasn't any. I've been like kind of keeping a corner of my eye on Twitter just to see if anything happens. Nothing, which means it's going to happen right after we probably finish this. But it is there. It's ready and waiting. So at some point, I'm sure during this offseason, we will have mid-show breaking news. And then we'll get to unveil that. I'm not even going to show you. So it's just going to be a surprise.
Oh man, I can't wait. Too. Yeah, I don't want to know it. Yeah, I want to wait too. I even was scrolling Twitter a little bit. I saw a notification but it was Woj dropped the podcast with an actor. Mm-hmm. So it was like, oh man, that's not even it. So, oh well, next time.
So, next time.
Hey, let's do a little bit of housekeeping for folks here. No more games to talk about. We're going to fully shift in the off-season mode here. So we'll continue to do news and rumors and all that stuff. We've got the draft is less than a week away on Thursday the 23rd. As of right now, our plan is on YouTube to do a live draft show.
Yep.
We'll do comments and questions and everything else. We'll have a lot of fun. It won't be the watch-along version of it because, let's face it, we're all going to be watching on Twitter and we'll know minutes to several minutes ahead of what the picks actually are. But that'll be fun because then we could talk about them and get into all of that stuff. And hopefully then we'll have a bunch of breaking news drops as well as we could drop our trade. One as well.
Oh, right. That's right.
We'll have a lot of fun during the draft. Then only a week later, 6 p.m., free agency opens.
Oh, boy.
Whether we go live for that or not, I believe, tell me if I'm wrong, because you could correct me here in front of the world. Mm-hmm. I think we're going to do our live wrap-up shows again at the end of each day in free agency like we did last year. We had a lot of fun with those. Those are good for the first 3-4 days of free agency when most of the action happens. Those tend to be pretty late at night. But you also get Punchy Keith and Punchy Trevor.
That's right.
We're awfully tired, and who knows what we might say. So we have a lot of fun with those too.
There was one day last year when I think I had done. It was like high single digit. It was like 8 or 9 different videos already for the Lakers Nation side, and then we did our live show, and I was like on autopilot forever.
I remember because it was the day that they signed like 14 dudes to.
That's right.
And I remember texting with you throughout the day, and by the end, I think I was just sending you laughing emojis, not at the signings, but just like, there's another one.
Right.
Like, it was great. So yeah, I thought it was, I do remember that. Cause I remember by the time you get on to the live show, you were pretty well talked out, but hey, as we all know, I like to talk more than enough for the two of us. So it works out pretty good.
It's going to be a lot of fun. I can't wait. This is, again, we talk about this all the time, but like when people who aren't in the basketball business talk to us, they always say, oh, wasn't it great getting your summers off?
My mom did it today. Oh, my mom said, so the Celtics season is over. Do you get a little bit of a break? And I was like, no, I'm busier than ever.
this means things ramp up now that the season ends. Yeah. That's what happens. That's the way the NBA news cycle is. But in any event, thank you, everybody, for joining us. Make sure you do subscribe to the NBA Front Office YouTube channel. Ring the notification bell. Don't forget to follow us over on Apple Podcasts as well. Leave us that 5-star rating and review. Have a great Father's Day weekend. We'll be back Monday. Maybe we'll get to use that breaking news drop then. Till then, everybody, see ya and stay safe.